Now, very early in the morning, I spoke to a shepherd, and that's not something you say every day, I think. And he is in the mountainous area in the northwest of England, which is known as the Lake District. His name is James Rebanks, and he was just home after a day tending his flock, which is currently in lambing season. His family has farmed in this area for 600 years, and the sheep they've been tending have been there for 5,000 years. And they're so accustomed to the landscape that they're what's called hefted. They don't need boundaries. They just don't stray from their pastures. Now, James Rebanks has written a book. It's called The Shepherd's Life. And guess what? It's become a surprise smash hit bestseller. He's going to be a guest at the Sydney Writers Festival, and we've been trying to catch up with him for ages, but he's rarely near a phone. But finally we did, and I hope you'll forgive this rotten phone line and my very early morning voice, because what he has to say is just so full of wisdom. Hi, James. It's Cassie speaking.
Hello, Cassie.
you sound like you're on a high on a hill, like a lonely goat herd.
Well, in Lederholm, not me.
I can hear the winds sweeping up the valleys there. Now, firstly, James, it's lambing season in the Lake District.
Yeah, it is. The timing of the lambing has to be at the time of year when we think the snows will have gone. So, in theory, we start about the 1st of April and run through for 5 or 6 weeks. But I say in theory, because last week we had snow. We had 4 or 5 inches of snow, so we didn't get the timing just right this year. But that's what happens if you do something outside, I guess.
Yeah, I guess also fluctuations in weather. We're having an extremely warm May here in Australia.
Our weather seems to be doing very strange things at the moment. We've had extreme floods in December, and we've had very, very late snow. And the weather seems to be all over the place.
You're in lambing season. How big is your flock of sheep?
So it isn't big by Australian standards. We run about 700 sheep. It's a traditional, what we call a fell farm. Fell is the dialect word here for mount. And our sheep go into the common land on the fells for the summer, and they come down in the winter. And we keep the native breeds of our area. So the Herdwick sheep that are famous because Beatrix Potter kept them, and the Swaledale sheep that are from the Pennines, which is sort of 15 miles away from here. And we try and breed as good a purebred sheep as we possibly can.
The Lake District, I know it from all those television thrillers. People always seem to be being murdered in the Lake District on TV. Is that what's going on there?
Not as many murders in real life as there is on the TV in the Lake District. No, it's 800 square miles, a very beautiful sort of mountainous mountains and lakes and moorland in the northwest of England, just beneath Scotland. So from the fell behind my house, you see about 20 miles away, you can see Scotland. And this time of year, it's just starting to green up after a really tough winter. But every day it's different, so it changes all the time, through the browns to the greens. And it's the most beautiful place in Europe, I'm convinced of it.
In your book, you describe your house looking out on a valley like an old man's cupped hands.
Indeed it does, and I'm just sitting looking out that window now. It's just gone dark, and I think one of the reasons people love the Lake District and the reason it attracts 16 million people a year is it's on a very human scale. It's quite friendly, and you can get around it quite easily. It's very, very beautiful. The mix of things that it has means a great deal to people throughout the world, I guess.
Well, this is part of what your book is about, and that is the way that this landscape has been revered by people, well, kind of since the beginning of the 19th century. It's been earmarked as a beautiful place and treated like that. But you say, really, it's a functioning landscape, a working one, and historically, you know, you come from a long line of people who have worked this land through all the seasons.
I thought it was time for a local lad to kick back a bit. We've been in books for, like you say, 200 odd years, but they tend to be books written by aristocrats or by walkers or poets. But there aren't many books written by the people that work that landscape. And for at least 5,000 years and maybe longer, it's actually been a working, lived-in, farmed landscape. It's probably one of the most important farmed landscapes on Earth. It's one of the few places where the farming in its structures is still as it would have been 1,000 years ago or even 4,000 or 5,000 years ago. And you have these unique flocks of sheep on the mountain that are hefted, which is the dialect word for They stay in their place on the mountain even without fences, even though there are other flocks around them.
Why do they do that, James? Why do they do that?
Because they were held in place by shepherds and by dogs thousands of years ago, and over time they realised that the sheep had learned themselves to stay in those places. And every spring, I'm about to do it tomorrow actually, every spring we take the flock back to the mountains, the fells, and the mother teaches the daughter that they stay on that part of the mountain, that you don't stray, you live on that particular part of it because that's where you belong. And there's an unbroken thread through my flock that goes back possibly 5,000 years. And there are very few places on earth now where the livestock, the flock, the herds of cattle, whatever it would be, have an unbroken genetic link that goes back to the beginning of farming and the beginning of settling the landscape.
And this is such a contrast to the way you were told to think about your homeland, your place, by a teacher at your school who was really encouraging you all boys to make something of yourself, which meant leaving this place.
Yeah, well, I went to a lousy school, but I was probably a lousy student as well. So in the book, I tell a story about what it's like to be one of the kids at school that doesn't want to be there. And that's quite a common story, but it's not a very common story in books, I guess. Books are usually written by the smart kids that leave and do all sorts of amazing things. And I wanted to write a book about what it was like to be one of the kids at the back of the class who was completely turned off by school and it didn't mean anything to me and was alienated by it. I felt that the values that my family represented and the things that they were about weren't really appreciated at school and didn't really fit into their way of thinking. So I just turned off it. And it was only later on that I realized how much I actually loved books and I loved learning and that changed around. And I realized that books could be about people like us and there's no reason to be alienated. And in fact, we could even write books and there could be books about people like us. So it's really, really nice for that story to come full circle and realize that it's okay to be a farm kid and to love your farm and to want to stay in the place where you grew up. I think there's no reason to be embarrassed about those things.
It seems sort of antithetical to the way that we're taught to go and seek greatness for ourselves and cast away our roots, cut those ties to family and become someone. And really that means we end up sometimes becoming adults in places we have no connection to, completely different to what you have done.
Yeah, I think that's exactly the case. The modern world, it's much more about the individual. It is much more about leaving the place that you're from, doing all sorts of other things. And I wanted to tell a story about the vast majority of people in the world who are actually tied to a particular place or tied to a profession or a way of life that holds them in that place. And some of those people might be dreaming of leaving and probably want to. Lots of them don't. Lots of them, like me, love what they do. They love what their family's done for many, many generations, and they have a very deep connection to the place that they're from. And I, in no way, shape, or form, want to leave. And I had very different role models. So my role models were people like my father and my grandfather and the other shepherds around me when I was growing up. And I looked at them and I thought, hang on a minute, they have a good life and they're proud and they love what they do. And I think that looks like a good life. And frankly, I've never changed my mind. I still think that now when I see them and that's how I feel about my own life. I think it's good for some people to up sticks and go and do other things, and I'm glad they do. But it's a reality for many, many other people in the world, and there are about 2 billion farmers in the world, I'm told. But lots of other people don't go anywhere, and they don't want to go anywhere, and they have meaningful lives that aren't about leaving.
But you say that your grandfather and your father and now yourself have a good life, but it's also a highly specialised life, and what you were learning at school was one kind of information, but there was this whole universe outside of school life, and that was what you were learning on the farm, this incredibly specific skills around raising sheep and keeping bloodstock lines running the way they should, etc. And one that's, as you say, been handed down through, well, possibly 5,000 years.
Yeah, I think so. And I think traditionally in books, sort of farming people or people that work on the land or do traditional things are basically blockheads, aren't they? They haven't got, they're sort of considered to be too thick to want to go do anything else. And that's just not what I see with my eyes every day. I'm surrounded by really smart people who do really intelligent stuff, whose brains are taxed all day long thinking about interesting things and interesting dilemmas. So somebody like my dad could barely spell and didn't read books hardly ever. But he could tell you who owned any piece of land for about 50 miles around our house. He knew absolutely everybody. He knew sort of encyclopedic amounts of information about the things he was interested in. And I think that's true wherever you go, isn't it? The idea that you're only traveling, you go to university or you do some kind of sort of fancy white collar job, I think that's ridiculous. There's lots of different ways to be intelligent and useful to live a meaningful life.
You say in this book that the seasons are everything, and in fact you've divided the book up into the four seasons, and you compare people who come to visit in the summer or the spring as a bit like having a girlfriend, but your experience of it is through all the seasons, and that's much more like the love a man might have for his wife.
I think that's true. Just in the last couple of days here, we've had what we call spring, which is sort of 2 days of sunshine between the showers. I think it is a very different experience if you're in the place all year round. It doesn't mean people from cities can't love the landscape. But, I think the way that you feel about a landscape and the way that you see it changes the longer you're in that place. So I'm 41 years old. I've lived on this farm or worked on it my whole life. And every day I feel like it opens itself up a little bit more and shows me things I've never seen before, or I start to understand it in new ways. I think it was Rousseau, the French philosopher Rousseau, said that a wise man could spend his whole life in a small French village and never run out of things to see or learn from. And I think he was right.
Mm, indeed. James, you're coming to Australia for the Sydney Writers Festival. Have you been to Australia before?
Yeah, I've been twice. I came when I was sort of 20 years old. After a row with my dad, I came backpacking with a friend for a couple of months. And then I came back a couple of years ago for UNESCO, and I came to South Australia and Barossa and Mount Lofty, and I was helping the people down there who were trying to make their colonial farmed landscape into a World Heritage Site, and that was amazing. I met some amazing people down there.
James, I was sad to read that your father died earlier this year, but I was pleased to know that he did have a chance to read your book. What will happen with the next generation? Have you found someone who's ready to take on this work?
My father sort of passed the baton on to me, and I wouldn't ask for it any other way. I'm proud and happy to take on from my dad and to try to keep it going. And I have three children, but they're quite young. So my eldest daughter is 10 and my middle daughter is 8, and then my son's only 4 years old. But they're all pitching on the farm, and they all have their own sheep, and they enjoy doing the farm work. And who knows? Oh, hopefully one of them, or more than one of them, will want to keep some of it going for the future. But even if they don't, I'd be happy that they just understood it, knew where they were from, and know exactly who we are and what we stand for before they go out and do other things.
Well, it sounds like you're tending your own family flock very well as well. Thanks, James. We look forward to meeting you when you come to Australia.
Can't wait to come. Really excited to come to the Sydney Writers Festival, and thank you for having me on the show.
James Rebanks, and his book is called The Shepherd's Life, and it's full of some very big questions, but posed in the most delightfully light way. And as he said, he'll be here for the Sydney Writers Festival in just a few days, really.
Want to hear about the best party in town this election season? It's a new podcast with me, Fran Kelly.
And me, Patricia Carvelis.
The Party Room, your essential guide to this federal election. Subscribe now. Simply search for The Party Room in your podcast app.
Or listen via the RN website, abc.net.au/RN.